Hey everybody, welcome back to our Sunday conversation here on FingerLakes1.com. I'm Josh Durso, and today we're talking with attorney Jeff Feigelson. There have been so many updates and changes and moving parts related to evictions in New York State that it has been objectively difficult to keep up with. Jeff has represented both tenants and landlords, though recently he is helping tenants navigate the various rules and regs associated with eviction. He joined us to unravel it all, taking the complexities out of the law as it stands today. Jeff also talked about how long he thought those changes would last or could last, and what that would mean for both tenants and landlords.
Sure. My name is Jeff Feigelson. I've been a lawyer for over 30 years, mostly a real estate lawyer. And during that time, I've represented tenants and landlords. Recently in the past, since COVID, I've been doing only tenant work. I don't represent landlords during the past 9-10 months. Basically, because I found most tenants were not represented in court, it was an important time period for tenants to be represented, because I knew there were laws that were protecting them. So that's how I kind of ended up doing more tenant work during the past year.
Walk us through where we stand right now with the eviction law or moratorium. It's gone through, it seems, this evolution over the last 8 months. Now we're in 2021. Where do we stand with it in New York State?
Yeah, well, good question. I mean, it has evolved, but the bottom line is this. It's pretty simple now. Is a new law was passed at the end of December, and it was a state statute passed in Albany, signed by Governor Cuomo. And basically, the intent of the statute was to avoid as many evictions as possible, period. And the theory being that the displacement and the movement of thousands of people who would otherwise be evicted was bad. It was bad because, more people would get COVID and the COVID situation would get worse. Thus, this statute was passed. And it's important to note that this statute only applies to residential foreclosures, evictions, not commercial. So if a landlord has a renting space to a candy store, he can go ahead and kick that person out if that person is not paying rent. As far as this new state statute, it's basically broken down to two different areas. First are existing eviction actions. And those are eviction actions that were in effect as of the day the statute was passed, which was December 28th, 2020. And with respect to those eviction actions, there's a 60-day stay that occurs right away. Now, if you're unfamiliar of what a stay is, in plain English, a stay means that nothing substantive happens during that 60-day period, and everything will remain the same for 60 days. And since the new law was enacted at the end of December, effectively that means nothing will happen in any residential eviction until March 1st, 2021. So if a landlord had a trial scheduled for next week, it's not happening, okay? It stops. Now, the bad news for landlords and the good news for tenants is that if during this 60-day stay, a tenant signs a piece of paper called a hardship declaration, then the stay is moved to May 1st. In fact, the statute says at least May 1st, so it could be even further. And that means that nothing will happen until May 1st, 2021. So in the real world, since the vast majority of tenants will be signing this declaration, whether or not they're entitled to, it's a separate issue. We could talk about that. Basically, hardly any residential evictions will occur before May 1st, 2021. And think about it. Even when May 1st comes around, there's going to be such a backlog of cases that realistically it's going to take the courts a couple months to catch up. So that if you were to ask me, Jeff, when are we going to go back to having real evictions and the sheriff coming to your door to kick you out? Probably won't happen until at least the summertime.
That's interesting. And while we're on it, I do want to have you dive into that a little bit. What is a hardship declaration? What is it and who's entitled to it? What's that process look like?
Sure. Any residential tenant's entitled to sign it. And to sign it, basically one of two things have to have occurred. One is the tenant has to certify that they are, quote, experiencing financial hardship during COVID. Okay. Now, that's pretty broad drafting of language. And there's some examples they give in here. And to me, it appears to be very broad. So if you're obviously, if you're making less money than you did pre-COVID, you're going to be in a good situation as far as getting the stay and being able to sign it. Now, how much less? 2%, 5%, 10%? Don't really know. And no one can really tell you. I mean, there is a provision that to me, even if you're making the same amount of money, there's a provision in here basically saying that if you don't have the moving expenses and you're having a hard time finding a new place, you can still sign this. So that to me means that, you know, even if you're making the same amount of money, you probably, but you don't have the $2,000 or $3,000. You know, a lot of people live paycheck to paycheck. They don't have the $1,000, $2,000 of moving costs. They probably can stay and sign this declaration. So the first, as I mentioned, the first way to sign this is just to say that you have experiencing financial hardship. The second way to sign it, there's a box that basically says that if vacating the premises and moving into new housing would pose a significant health risk because the tenant or someone in its family has an increased risk of getting COVID because they're older, over 65 years old, or there's some type of pre-existing condition, okay? So now think about that. Obviously, if someone has cancer or something like that, that's obvious. But if someone has asthma, you know, and they come into court and they say, Your Honor, my son has asthma or had asthma as a child, and he's a little bit better now, but he had asthma. It's a respiratory condition, and I'm nervous about him moving, so please don't kick me out, even though I didn't pay rent for 5 months. The judge probably will let that go and will not kick that person out and hear the case until May of 2021. Now, what is interesting is technically the landlords probably have the right to contest this. I think it's going to be difficult for them to do. And even if they do it, if you think about the timing, it doesn't give them that much. So think about it. There's going to be no hearings. Let's say your next hearing is a landlord. Josh, you're a landlord. Say your next hearing is on March 15th. And you come into court and you want to challenge my client's hardship. You say, Your Honor, let him prove that he is making less money now. And let's contest this. Well, I would say, fine. Okay, we'll do this. But the judge will say, well, I'm not doing it now because I have 50 cases in the next hour. But we'll do this. Let's say April 20th. We'll schedule for April 20th. Okay, fine. So now you're gonna have a hearing on April 20th. Let's assume you win, which is gonna be difficult for you to win. It's April 20th. You save 10 days. It's almost not worth it to do. But one thing, you know, I have to say about the landlords is, as of today, as I mentioned, the stay goes all the way to at least May 1st. This is the way the statute reads. That could be moved because if things don't get better, it can be moved. And there is, just to digress, because I'm just talking about the state statute, there is a federal moratorium in effect, a federal stay as well. That's what people were getting confused for a while. And that used to be applicable in New York, meaning that people would use it because we didn't have the state statute. So we glommed on to this federal moratorium, which was issued by the CDC, Centers for Disease Control. They issued like a directive saying we have our own moratorium. But that moratorium expired on January 31st, but Biden just extended that to March 31st. To me, as a tenant lawyer, I don't even care about it today because the state statute goes out further. However, Biden was talking about possibly extending that to September of 2021. Think about that. So that means now I'm going to walk into court. I'm not going to talk about the new state statute anymore. I'm going to talk about the new CDC directive, which gives me all the way to September of 2021, where, by the way, basically in that situation, landlords won't be receiving any money, no rent for all that time. It could be over a year, you know, so and there's some unfairness in all positions here.
So I want to get into that issue of fairness and who it's more fair for, or if it goes far enough or not far enough, or what the issues are there. But last fall, when we interviewed and spoke with some folks on the tenant advocacy side, excuse me, I can't talk today. The concern there was that while the moratorium sounded nice on paper, it relied on basically individual discretion among judges. And the concern from their point of view was that you were going to get completely inconsistent application of these standards around the state throughout the moratorium. And it seemed like that concern backed off a little bit after the most recent version of it was passed down from Albany. But is that still a kind of a wild card in this situation where you may have, you may, you know, go to three different towns and have three different sort of outcomes on equal merits, so to speak?
Yes. I mean, you can't, I mean, you're before a different judge all the time. And a lot of these judges are part-time judges. They're not as if they have, they're hearing 500 cases a month. So you can get different types of interpretations. Especially, I have to say, the CDC declaration, when that was being used a little bit back in November or so, that was tougher for the tenant to sign because there were some things in there, like it would say that a tenant must pay as much as he can possibly pay, even if it's you know, part of the rent.
Right.
So there was an obligation almost to pay if you had $1,000 rent and you could afford $250, you're supposed to pay the $250 to get the federal moratorium. Governor Cuomo's statute does not have that. And basically, that's why that could be interpreted, I think, a number of different ways, the CDC declaration. However, the state statute's broader, and I think it's going to be tougher for judges to have wildly different opinions on these different things. The bottom line is, I think under the Cuomo statute, it's going to be interpreted more in favor of the tenants. And of course, there are going to be some judges that are part-time judges, don't see a lot, and they're landlords themselves. So they sympathize with landlords, of course. And I do too. I mean, you know, most of these landlords I see are not, you know, multi-billionaires, and they're getting killed. Think about it. If you have a person who has a 2 or 3 unit building and they're not getting one tenant's rent for a year, that is, you know, for them could be, it's tough. It's tough to make money. They're not going to make money. They're going to lose money this year.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some of that in judges' minds of what's fair. But the bottom line is, you're supposed to read the statute and apply the statute. And even though it may not be, quote, fair to landlords, that's what was passed by Albany. And that's what judges are supposed to apply.
When someone poses to you the fairness question or clause, I guess, for landlords, for tenants, how do you approach it? How do you answer that question? Is it fair to landlords? Is it fair to tenants? What's the balance?
Well, remember, I'm representing tenants. So the answer to me is, even though it may not be fair to the landlord, my job is to give my client whatever rights he's entitled to under the statute. So I don't really entertain that. Now, in my private life, I may talk about, you know, something should be done for the landlords. Of course it should be. I mean, there should be programs for the landlords. You know, there is a program in Albany now called the COVID Rent Relief Extension Program, where in theory, tenants can apply for 4 months rent for certain months, I might add. It's only for April, May, June, July of 2020. If they made, you know, like very little money, they in theory can apply for some rent subsidies, which go directly to the landlord. I could tell you that I read that program, and I just got to read one thing to give you an idea of what that program is and how it's a government program. It'll take about 30 seconds. It says the subsidy for eligible applicants will be calculated as the difference between the household's rent burden on March 1st, 2020 and the household's rent burden during the months of April, May, June, July of 2020, except for applicants whose rent burden was lower than 30% on March 1st, the subsidy will be sized to reduce their rent burden to 30% for the lowest month during the coverage period. Now, I don't know how many listeners there are here today, but not one of them will understand that. Okay.
Right.
It took
right.
me hours to go through it and speak to the people there. And I have a sense of what the program's supposed to do. But it's one of these programs that was drafted by someone very sharp, probably sharper than you and I, but so sharp that the average tenant has no idea what they're doing. So I think realistically, that program is not very beneficial right now. Maybe it'll change, and hopefully it will. So yep. To answer your question about fairness, you know, objectively, it's not fair to the landlords, and you have to do something for the landlords. And I think something will be done for the landlords down the road.
Yeah.
But right now, we don't know what's going to be done. And if you think about it, Josh, right now, we're always in a position of not knowing. So what kind of deal should a landlord cut today? What I usually like to do is I ask my clients, I say to them, hey, you know, how much do you care if your landlord gets a big judgment against you at the end of the day? Because at the end of the day, if they're not paying rent for 10 months, they're going to get a judgment. Okay. Yeah. Now, most landlords know that even though you have a judgment, you're never going to get it. I mean, there's like a 10% chance, a 20% chance you're actually going to recover on the judgment. And if I have a client who doesn't care about that, well, then the answer is they'll go as long as possible without paying any rent, which obviously is not a nice thing, but that's what they want to do. But most tenants and a lot of tenants prefer not to have a judgment for various reasons, right? Right. So in that situation, what I try to do with the landlords right now is I say to them, look, we'll start paying rent on February 1st and we'll pay March and April and we'll get out by April 30th because they all want us out. So I give a 3 or 4 month period. I give my client to try to find another place to get out. And if I do get out by that day, you have to forgive all back rent. Mm. And many landlords will do that because they'll say, hey, otherwise I'm getting nothing. And, you know, and this way they know a couple of things. One, they're going to get some rent. Two, they're going to get my client out, which is what they want. So from the tenant's point of view, they know that they're not going to have a judgment against them if they can get out by that date. Now, if the tenant can't get out by that date, well, then the landlord still has to evict them. And the tenant understands that there could be a big judgment filed against him if he doesn't get out by that day. But that's how kind of a lot of these things try to get resolved, is that we try to pick up paying rent now. We will get out by a certain date, but don't go after me for back rent. And that's how we do it. The problem with that from landlord's point of view is maybe something will change. Maybe there'll be a new program 2 months from today where they can get back rent. Yeah. And, you know, so you're kind of operating in the dark. Both the tenants are operating in the dark because I'm saying to them, I'll get out by a certain date, but maybe it'll change that I don't have to get out to September. And maybe right. It was a mistake to negotiate today that I'm going to get out by April 30th, you know? So it's kind of hard to figure out what the exact right strategy is, whether you're a landlord or a tenant, to be honest with you.
So you mentioned the whole prospect of a settlement or down the road when things get back to normal, a judgment and how rarely those are actually recovered. I'm curious, you mentioned that you threw out like the 10% number. How was it for landlords trying to recoup those funds before the pandemic? And does it, I mean, one could assume that that percentage is going to be even lower afterward, right? Because the numbers are going to be just inflated so dramatically.
Yeah, but still, even before COVID, most landlords, quite frankly, didn't even go after getting the judgment. They just wanted people out. Wow. Because they know realistically it's so hard to collect on a judgment. You have to get a lawyer to do it, and you have to know where they work. And even when they work, they'll get 10% of the salary. It's just difficult. So even pre-COVID, you know, as a landlord myself, I can't remember ever getting a judgment that I pursued after someone moved out and didn't pay rent. I mean, there are people, by the way, you know, different personalities in this world, right? I mean, there are some people, and I find this even now negotiating, there are people who want every dollar of back rent, every dollar. And they're not going to, I go, will you forgive 1 month back rent? And they go, no, I will not. And, you know, those people playing hardball. And then what does a tenant do? He's going to play hardball and he's going to stay as long as possible. And, you know, there may be a judgment and, you know, people can always file bankruptcy, God forbid, you know, worst case scenario. And avoid a judgment that way. So, you know, I see different types of personalities. The ones who work with the tenants usually make out, I think, better, to be honest yep. with you.
Well, and you mentioned before that for the tenants that don't flinch at a possible judgment, they probably aren't also going to be flinching at the prospect of having to file bankruptcy 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, right?
I think it's more likely that someone who doesn't care about a judgment, it's more likely that he has no qualms or less qualms to file for bankruptcy. But it might not be 3, 4 years down the road. It could be 6 months down the road. I mean, right after this is all over, he has a judgment for $15,000 against him. He probably has some credit card debt for $10,000 or $15,000. And he'll file for what's called Chapter 7 bankruptcy, where he'll just discharge all those debts and start from scratch. He may not want to wait 2 or 3 years because during that 2 or 3 year period, the landlord could, in theory, come after you. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with bankruptcy filings as well. So you raise an interesting point. It's not just tenants who file bankruptcy. A lot of small business owners who were not able to open for many months. I mean, there have to be an increased amount of bankruptcies coming up, I would think. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
From your point of view and your lot in life, so to speak, what are you watching over the next 3 months as sort of maybe the most interesting point or potential area of movement on this front?
Well, on the narrow issue of evictions, to me, it's a function of how we're doing with hospitalizations, how we're doing with vaccinations, how many people per month are getting COVID positive tests back. So if things are improving vastly by May, then my sense is that the statute will not be extended. But if we're kind of in the same situation we are today, it will be extended. So, you know, and this could be a month by month thing where today it doesn't look good. I don't think it looks good today, but 2 months from today, if in fact Biden is able to, put vaccines in 100 million people, maybe things will get better. And consequently, so that's what I look at. I look at, from the eviction point of view, if things stay the same or get worse, the eviction moratorium date will be extended out. If it gets better, then I think some rough times are coming for tenants because they will be kicked out. There will be judgments against them. And we'll see how that all plays out.
My last question for you. There is an entire, and what seems to be from this journalist's perspective, watching this issue, housing issue in general over the last 5 years kind of evolve in New York State, seems like there's a growing contingency of folks who want to see some kind of permanent policy in place to not just protect protect renters, protect homeowners, whatever the case may be, but to codify some sort of housing as an essential human right. Do you think, given if this continues, say we're in a scenario where, you know, it's extended to September or, you know, God forbid, maybe next year, where we're still in this kind of waiting game to get back to quote unquote normal. Do you think it could push some lawmakers or maybe, you know, the state period to consider some kind of permanent action that changes the rental landlord relationship permanently?
I personally don't think so. I think it'll go back to being what it was. If someone takes the point of view that housing is an essential human right, I mean, no one's going to disagree that everybody needs housing, but someone's got to pay for it.
Right.
And that's that simple. So if you could do all that without raising taxes, great. But realistically, I think that's going to be difficult to do. And I don't think things are going to change long term, to tell you the truth. Although I will say one thing is that we have a different people in Albany now, right? I mean, for 40 years, the Republicans held the state Senate. And consequently, they were always the moderating force in having what some people would think are some extreme legislation. And now they're not there anymore. So I saw there's a new tenant statute unrelated to this COVID, which was passed, and other statutes were passed, the Bail Reform Act, where basically 90% of defendants who go before judges now, they don't set bail. They're not allowed to set bail because there's a new philosophy. I'm sorry, the state Senate now is held by the Democrats.
Right.
So the Democrats have all three, they have the two houses and they have the governorship. And they're going to be more, some people may say people friendly, criminal friendly, whatever it may be. There's less of a moderating influence. So I think the bottom line is there was a statute passed in June of 2019, which gave tenants a lot more rights. And it makes it a lot harder to, significantly harder to evict tenants. And that's a function of having now the Democrats in control of Albany, quite frankly. And if that continues, maybe there will be a movement towards housing as an essential right. And everybody should have a place to live. You know, but that's going to take time. I don't see that happening in the next year or so. You have to have people buy into it, right? You got to do it in small steps. You know, it's like smoking. They didn't just say smoking's not allowed. They said smoking's not allowed in your office or within 6 feet of someone, but you can't do it if a person's not there. And then they extended it, and now you can't smoke in a building really anymore,
right?
In New York City at least. So it has to be done incrementally, I think, to get it done. So,
all right, Jeff, appreciate the time.
Sure.
We definitely want to catch up again later in the spring, see how all this stuff shakes out and see where we stand.
Sure. Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, Josh.